I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, we present the fifth in a series of community panels called We Marched, We Rallied, Now What?, co-presented by the Women's March Bay Area. Today's panel features representatives from various racial justice organizations to discuss the challenges they face during the new administration, including Catherine Canton of Emerging Arts Professionals, Alex Yu In of Mama's Boys, Rahula Janowski of Catalyst Project, Vanessa Moses of Causa Justa. The moderator is Angeles Roy. And now join Sophia Andari, co-lead of the Women's March in San Francisco, on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces our panelists.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming out. I'm Sophia Andari, co-lead of Women's March San Francisco. We're very happy you came out tonight, and continuing to engage is very important for us at Women's March San Francisco. We had about 90,000 show up on Saturday, right? So I'm really glad that this room is filled up. I think it's really important to continue to show up for our communities and give yourselves a round of applause for showing up. So thank you. I would like to now introduce our moderator for tonight's discussion, Angeles Roy. Angeles is a bilingual, bicultural community organizer and political strategist. She is a graduate of City College of San Francisco and the University of California, Berkeley, where she received a BA in political science. She is currently the immediate past president of the San Francisco Young Democrats, Immigrants' Rights Commissioner for San Francisco, elected delegate to the California Democratic Party, advisor to the Political Action Committee, California Women's List, and board of directors at Instituto Familiar de la Raza. Hopefully I said that right. Yeah. She currently works for Eleni Kunalakis. It's his campaign for California Lieutenant Governor as Deputy Campaign Manager. She is a graduate of Emerge California and the New American Leaders Project, and a frequent public speaker on political campaigns, women in leadership, and the need for diversity in public office. Yes. Please welcome Angeles and our panelists.
Good evening, everyone. I can't tell you how excited I am to be here in front of all of you. Great turnout and in the presence of these amazing and very accomplished women. What I would like to do to begin with is quickly introduce everyone by name with title, and then I'm going to give a couple minutes to each speaker to tell us a little bit about themselves, their background, and maybe what was that turning moment that made them go into racial justice. So to begin with, Rahula, in my farthest right, Rahula Janowski, organizer and trainer at the Catalyst Project. Vanessa Moses, right here next to me, executive director of Causa Justa. Alex Yu In, Bay Area activist and founding member of Mama's Boys. And finally, Catherine Canton, co-director of Emerging Arts Professionals, San Francisco Bay Area. Thank you so much for being here. And maybe we can start with Rahula all the way here with introductions.
Hello, everybody. My name is Rahula Janowski. I work with Catalyst Project, which is an organization that focuses on movement building and building anti-racism in white activist and organizing communities. I grew up in the most northeastern part of Vermont, which is kind of a little bit different than you think of Vermont. It's very poor. It's very conservative politically, also very beautiful. And I grew up there in a countercultural, my parents were hippies. And I came out to San Francisco in the early 90s and was involved in kind of environmental activism. And then got involved with Food Not Bombs in San Francisco and did work there. And then I went to Seattle in 1999 for the WTO protests. After those protests, Elizabeth Batita Martinez put out an article called Where Was the Color in Seattle? Talking about how even though the people most affected by the policies of the WTO are people of color, people in the developing world, the faces of the protests tended to be white. Not that there weren't people of color there, but the faces that you saw tended to be white. And so I was part of a wave of younger white activists who really took that as a call to action. That was the spark that created Catalyst Project. I joined Catalyst Project more recently, but I was alongside them. And that was a moment of being like, okay, I have been involved in direct action organizing, considering myself on the left, considering myself anti-racist, but was involved in, just didn't actually know how to be anti-racist, didn't know how to be in multiracial movements in ways that were helpful and not harmful. And so that has been, a learning process since then. I expect it to be a learning process my whole life. But 1999 in Seattle was kind of the spark of like, this is who I want to be in the world. This is the work I want to be in the world, and I'm going to learn how to do it.
Hello, lovely people. Good evening. I'm Catherine Canton. I'm the co-director for Emerging Arts Professionals San Francisco Bay Area, or EAP for short. And we are a network of arts and culture workers in the Bay Area. And really, our work is to empower the individual to eventually, and through really concrete, slow relationship building, and sometimes like leaps, to shift the arts sector so that it is more transparent, more equitable, and resilient and valued as part of a full, robust society. The way that I look at my work is through community building and power building, but through arts administration. And one of the pieces was when I was really young, I had a traumatic experience and I went to counseling and my counselor brought up crayons, and that was super transformative for me. And I realized that that was a power that is not always tapped into and not always available to everyone. And that was a spark for me, one of the sparks.
Hey there, I'm Alex Yuen. I am part of the Mama Boys, and for those of you who know the Mama Boys, we are a live vocal drag king troupe that travels around the world, and what we do with our music is change the lyrics to reflect the environment that we're in, and we have a lot of music to make with the administration that we have right now. We started because I was teaching hip-hop at Harvey Milk Civil Rights Academy as part of our after-school program. My board, the Friends of Harvey Milk, which I'm the president of, had the CBO at that school. And so part of what I was seeing in my class were students coming and doing movements that they should not be doing. They were too adult. Saying words and singing songs that weren't appropriate. And it just said to us that there's some role models that they're having at home that maybe not be the best role models for them, and maybe we can make a difference. And for the little girls to be doing, little four-year-olds to be doing booty rolls is not what I'd like to see a four-year-old do, right? So I got with my drag king group, and I said, we got to make a change. We got to do something different. And so we started performing for them, changing the words so we're not being homophobic, where we're not degrading women, where we're not being racist in our slurs, right? And put on a show and came out as boys, dressed in drag, did a live show with changing all the words to the songs that they knew. My name is Alex, got a real funky concept. Listen up, because I want to keep you in step. I got an idea that I want to share. You don't like it, so what? I don't care. I'm number one, I'm uno. You know, it's like those kind of lyrics, changing them so they can, take it on themselves to understand why we're doing that. Then we took our makeup off and we talked to them about what they saw. Right. So that was a big change for me to see to hear the questions and to see the changes in our little ones. They're our future. So if we can't impress them to make some changes, then me as an old person is going to have a big, hard time. Right. So what that did, because some of the parents, most of the parents found out about it, which was cool. They started hiring us to go to their offices. And we didn't take our makeup off and talk to them. But we did get messages out there because they were listening to our lyrics. So as part of that movement, and just as I explained to these guys in the back, somebody asked me, when did I get started with activism and eventually artivism, is when I came out of the womb. Being in this skin color is a protest every day. And if we don't recognize, and if we don't have you as allies, it's to continue to be a struggle for us, especially when we have a blank check to do whatever we want to brown and black people in this country right now. So I'm Alex Yuen. I'm sure you're going to ask me more questions later, but I just thought I'd give you that little tip.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Vanessa Moses, and I'm really delighted and excited to be on this panel with these folks. And I am the executive director at Casa Justa and Just Cause, and we are building grassroots power and community leadership to respond to the twin crises of affordability and of crimmigration, which is the intersection of immigration and criminalization. And we are organizing Black and Latino immigrants, those most impacted, to confront these issues and to advance the solutions they are coming up with, not just to change their own lives, but ultimately to make the cities that they call home better for everyone, right? And that's looking at Oakland and San Francisco specifically. Our work includes, we do policy fights, we do civic engagement, we have rights-based services, we do direct action, leadership development, and we are ultimately trying to make our contribution to building the multiracial and multigenerational movement that it's going to take to have the deep transformation of society that all of us, everyone in this room, our children actually deeply need and deserve. And I came to this work, I've been with Casa Justa for just over 12 years, and I was just really blessed to learn that there was work in the world that was based on relationships building with people and inviting folks to be a part of changing the conditions of their lives and being transformed through that process and getting to witness folks have those kind of light bulb moments and recognize the power that they have and, equally important, the power that we have when collectively we are fighting for change. Once I learned that that was something that I could spend my time doing, there was really no going back. So that's me.
Thank you, Vanessa, for touching on the subject of some of the work that Causa Justa does, which is so important for the San Francisco Bay Area community. I want to ask the same question to all of you, starting by Alex. What does racial justice at this point in time in this country mean to you, and how does it relate to the work that you're trying to build through your organization?
What racial justice? You know, the definition of racial justice does not exist right now for us. And so if I was to put it into some context, walking down the street in San Francisco, you think you're safe, right? That we live in this bubble, that, you know, we're happy and things are moving along and we're supported. We have our allies. I got called a twice in 1 month. Once at Second and Harrison, and followed by, go back from where you came. San Francisco, Second and Harrison. So that's not racial justice to me. You know, how can I hold on to racial justice when I still have to walk in my own city and be accosted like that? What it would mean to me if we were in a utopia, if there was unicorns thrown around all the, running around all the place, would mean that we were all coming from love and had some healthy debates about our differences, right? So we can come to that center point of some sort of agreement. Because once you make an agreement or you negotiate with someone, whether you like it or not, you're going to hold true to it because that was a promise you made to each other, right? So you're going to have each other's back whether you're liking it or not. And that's what I would like racial justice to be. That we have each other's back no matter what. That we're not just coming together on one day a year, and wearing our pink hats, and then that's what we do all year. That is not what we should be doing. Right? It should not be up to the marginalized folks to be out in the streets fighting for themselves. We should have every single ally signing up for a certain day of the street to be right in front of the ICE office, to be right in front of our representatives, to be writing notes, to be, you know, whatever you need to do, that's what we should do. That's what racial justice would mean to me, is that I know that if I walk down the street and somebody called me a that one of you y'all would just step out and go, what do you mean, dude?
That's right.
You know, Alex, we got you. There are people standing around that happened, and they just act like it doesn't happen. If there was a wall that went between me and the person who accosted me, then I would feel like there is some racial justice.
I appreciate you bringing up utopia and unicorns. I think I'm going to, for me, my education and where I am and doing my own work around racial justice is really a couple years ago having the, whatever it was, that I was irritated enough to just call out white supremacy in all of the spaces I was in. And that was really uncomfortable because I also had gone through this iteration of being the angry brown girl or brown woman in all of these spaces. So I had to do my own like adjustment and acceptance of the different roles that I have to play, right? The code switching, whether I wanted to or not. And I got to a point where I made the choice that that was what I was going to call out. So for me, the work around racial justice is acknowledging and challenging myself and other people who are around me, who I have strong relationships with, to talk about how white supremacy impacts us and how we're part of that system. So my utopia, I haven't figured it out yet. I definitely want unicorns. My analogy is a community garden or like a vibrant environmental ecosystem where we all have our roles and feel satisfied and fulfilled in that. But we have a ton of work to do. And for me, one of the first pieces is acknowledging white supremacy and calling it out. And in a way that is holding love and holding this, like, we have a relationship, we're in it together. I'm not just putting it on you to deal with. We're going to be in partnership.
Racial justice, I don't think that I can offer a definition of what it is, but I can say that it's what I work for. It's what Catalyst Project is working for. Like, we want that world where every white person is ready to be that wall and is ready to intervene and like stand up for people and have people's back. But it's important to think about, we aren't interested in making better white people. When we do trainings, when we work with people, we're not trying to help white people be good and act right. We're trying to build movements that will change the face of the country. And we're trying to get white folks to the point where they can participate in those movements in meaningful ways, in helpful ways, and in ways where they're not centering themselves and ourselves and our white privilege in the spaces we go into. I think it's just important to acknowledge that the biggest barrier to racial justice, however you define it, is white people. And I don't mean white supremacists, although they are, you know, odious in every way. But I mean folks like me, like well-meaning people who are fighting for justice, economic justice, social justice, even racial justice, but aren't really aware of the ways that how the ways that we show up may actually work at a counter to what we're trying to do. And so I think that one of the things that racial justice means is that white people are decentered and aren't running the show. I guess that's all I'll say on that for now.
You're listening to We Marched, We Rallied, Now What? On Racial Justice, co-presented by the Women's March Bay Area, featuring Catherine Canton of Emerging Arts Professionals, Alex Yu In of Mama's Boys, Rahula Janowski of Catalyst Project, and Vanessa Moses of Causa Justa. And the moderator is Angeles Roy. On Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So I would add to the conversation that racial justice means that your zip code does not determine your mortality. It means that your skin color does not determine whether or not an encounter with the police is life or death. It does not determine the likelihood of your family getting dispersed throughout the region. It does not look like the President of the United States referring to your homeland with words that I can't say to my two-year-old. And also want to add that I think racial justice is only achievable in tandem with economic justice and gender justice. Because these systems of oppression that Catherine and other folks have been speaking to completely rely on each other, right, to survive. And as Rahula was saying, they also rely on all of our full participation in them, right? So the good news is there are so many different opportunities for us to intervene and for us to be able to move things. And then I just want to add in terms of racial justice and for how does that show up in our work? For Causa Justa, the affordability crisis, crimmigration, those are inherently racial justice kind of fights and realms. So for instance, the displacement that's happening throughout the region is economically driven and disproportionately affecting Black and Brown and other immigrant communities, right? Our families are the ones that are getting pushed out to Antioch, to Stockton, et cetera, which is why Oakland lost 25% of our Black population between 2000 and 2010. It's why the Black population here in San Francisco, we've been bleeding Black people for many years here in San Francisco, right? And then I think the fight for immigrant rights, hopefully it's pretty clear how that is connected to racial justice. But to name, for instance, in this moment that the U.S. is theoretically based on democracy, right? It's one of the core values for our society. But the what's happening right now is the explicit violation of civil liberties of millions and millions of people based on race, based on gender, et cetera. And if democracy is what we are trying to make possible and what we need to defend the civil liberties of everyone, regardless of status, right? Regardless of, obviously, race, gender, et cetera. And we need to defend our ability to politically participate, right? Because right now there's also the criminalization of dissent, right? It's a key tactic, right, from this administration to try and suppress the political activity, right, of our communities. And participating in that, right, the defense of civil liberties for all is also a part of racial justice.
Thank you, Vanessa. It sounds like an overly simplistic question. However, I am hopeful that it will provide us with some juicy answers. What, in your opinion, is the main factor holding our society back from achieving racial justice? And I know that we mentioned history, we mentioned the lack of empathy. There are so many, many factors. In your opinion, what is that thing that is holding us all back? Maybe we can start with Catherine.
I think there's a deeply entrenched level of individualism globally, but very much tied to how we do capitalism, how we, the U.S., does capitalism, and how we've been doing capitalism for a long time. And honestly, I think that's like we won't reach a lot of progress until we think about the we and the collective.
Well, I did already sort of allude to this. White people? and I just have to say that I have so much love for white people in my heart, and that's part of why the work that I do is working with white people. I believe in our potential to do right and to be meaningful parts of movements for social, racial, and economic justice. The other thing I think, individualism, yes, absolutely. And then I think there's a thing about a lack of imagination. Like during the Reagan and Thatcher years, there was the saying, there is no alternative. There's no alternative to capitalism. There's no alternative to imperialism. This is just the way things are. But that's not true. That things have been many other ways. Things can be many other ways. But I think that through a combination of political forces, media, entertainment, all, like how we're educated, all these things kind of put us into this space of thinking that there really isn't any other alternative, that there aren't other systems, that there's not other ways that the world could look. To add another thing to that, people will say that racism is just human nature. I don't believe that. I don't think that that's true, but that's a way of limiting our imagination and telling ourselves that we can't think of something better.
If I may, a lot of what I was thinking in terms of what some of the primary kind of obstacles are is, yeah, to piggyback, is the variety of ways that we have individually and collectively been kind of misshapen by how society is currently structured, right? So it impacts our capacity for imagination. It definitely is linked to the sense of individualism and really profound alienation, right? There's actually a tremendous amount of resources and energy that goes into teaching us that the way things are right now is the way they've always been. Right, teaching us that there's nothing we can do about it, that we don't deserve what we got, certainly not more. There's a long, long list, right? Teaches us that competition is kind of the natural order of things as opposed to cooperation and collaboration. So I think some of the work that needs to happen to achieve racial justice, in addition to it being connected to economic justice, gender justice, et cetera, it's going to require a movement, right? We need much larger organizations, institutions, coordination, and we need a vision, right? Because I think so much of us, and I imagine this is true at least for those of us up here, and I bet many of you guys out there, we have more practice in kind of naming what's wrong with things, and less practice around what is the alternative vision, what is the different kind of world that we are trying to build, right? And the only way we can build the kind of movement that we need for the deep transformation of individuals, of society, of structures, et cetera, is for us to have everybody be a part of that, for everyone to be so clear that another world is possible and being fully committed to helping bring that into existence. So yeah, very much with you, Rahula, on being able to envision what that other world could look like, where, again, your zip code doesn't determine your life, et cetera. Imagine what things could look like if all of the energy that people of color, working class folks, women, et cetera, all of the energy that we put into surviving under this current system, if we could take that energy and be building things for each other and investing in taking full care of one another. There's so much that is in fact fully possible for us, and yeah, ditto on the imagination, and combine that with movement building, organization, and intersection with economic justice and gender justice. Check.
Well, a lot of people would say, how do I get started? Yes. Like, that's all great. All this is what we're saying is really excellent, because some of us have already been there and been out again. Some of us are just getting started, if you know what I mean. So what do we do? There are plenty of things that everybody in this room could do. One, let's just start with the race inequality that happens, the cultural inequality that happens just in your workplace. Yes. Right? Yes. You know, you can make a change there. How many here are managers? 1/3 of this room is managers. How many are director and above? Of those directors and above, how many are women? And how many of our color? 4 people in a room of hundreds. I'm not saying that or pointing that out to be shameful, because 4 is better than 0, right?
But it's too hard.
And that's that rhetoric that comes back to us. It's too difficult. I'm not quite sure how to manage that person. That person seems to be angry to me, and I don't know how to do that. There's stigmas that come along with being in this skin color and other skin colors. So we can start at those kind of levels, that where you can take care of things yourself. And then once we start understanding that in yourself, then that's when you start paying it forward to helping others understand it. I work for a company, we do artificial intelligence and machine learning. I'm an engineer. And I am the only masculine center, dark skin, queer person out of 126 people. And I'm a leader. I'm in the leadership role. But those numbers are a little dismal, right? We don't have a diversity program. Well, we will next month. And I want to, you know, really coach them into calling it an equality program. Because we hide too many things in that word diversity, right? And it gives us a pass. But if we look at equality, then there's more room for our LGBTQQAI2S brothers and sisters, especially our trans brothers and sisters. There's more room for the darker complexions of folks to be in not only that workforce, but to also take a position of leadership. So those are the kind of things that we can do immediately, right? You know, the gender and racial biases start right where we work. Starts right in your own companies, whether you're small or whether you're large. And if we can make some movement and really have some positive change just even at that level, then you have just become part of the movement. And once you get comfortable with making changes that are outside of your comfort zone, I hate those words, but I'm going to say it, outside of your comfort zone, then you get bold enough and your fear starts to go away in ways that you'll surprise yourself. So for those of you who do the work, thank you. For those of you who are thinking about doing the work, thank you. For those of you who have not started the work, thank you. Because now you will start thinking about it a little bit more.
Thank you so much. Certainly the United States does not have a proudest history in terms of racial equity. However, when things couldn't get any worse, they did, right? In 2016. So my question for the panelists would be, how can we leverage the current events taking place here in our country, the constant attacks by some media outlets, the constant attacks from the White House towards people of color all across the nation? How can we leverage this energy coming from folks like the ones that we have right in front of us to creating a movement that can create permanent positive change?
Yeah, the political moment that we find ourselves in is full of a tremendous level of threats and attacks. And one thing that has some openings or opportunities in it is the administration has basically provided targets on the backs of damn near everybody.
That's right.
Right? Part of the kind of strategy and tactics that they have been using have been scapegoating, right? Different communities and trying to tell, for instance, black people that the immigrants are stealing your jobs. Tell Latino immigrants that black folks are dangerous criminals, right? Tell working class white folks that it's the black people and the immigrants who are freeloaders and that's who you should be mad at, right? Helping to retain like a distraction from the actual sources of the suffering that so many people are facing. But the good news is it's become clearer and clearer to so many of us that really deep practices of solidarity are the only way we're going to get out of this, right? It's not possible for us to just worry about me and mine. Right? As it stands, the right has taken over the federal government, all three branches of it, right? The amount of kind of power that we are needing to struggle against is in some ways unprecedented. Though Lord knows the kind of the daily attacks that people of color and working class folks have been facing, much of it is not new, but there's just this huge increase in kind of the power and resources behind what's coming at us. But that solidarity, that opportunity and recognition that we can't possibly even defend against the attacks that are coming without each other. We can't even begin to dream of having the long-term vision that we've been fighting for without one another. So that's another piece that feels essential in this political moment is that vision, right? Because some of what has gotten us here is the right being able to tell this story about the cause of people's suffering that uses all that scapegoating and is trying to tell us that we need some big strong man in office and that's what's going to kind of get us to some better place. And we need to be able to tell a different story, right? We need to be able to articulate the histories and systems that are at play and to invite everyone to participate in creating a better life that can be possible for all of us, and that needs to be based on the needs and the dreams and the vision of the communities that are most impacted by the current system, right? Because when we are able to make society a safe and thriving place for people of color, everybody does in fact win. Right? And we are capable of articulating this vision, like I was describing before, that hopefully everyone in this room and well beyond can see themselves inside of. This political moment actually provides some really, really profound opportunities for that. And we've seen it, the Women's March being one really brilliant example of how many folks have been recently kind of activated, right? And even as there are many who, before 45 was elected, may not have been questioning kind of how things were operating, they're questioning it now, right? And we need to take full advantage of that and welcome folks in. Right? Figure out how to bring folks in to participate in this movement. We need to be supporting each other, training each other to participate in direct action, right? To join different organizations. And again, to support the leadership of the impacted communities in that kind of broad front that we need to defend against the attacks and continue, right? Because we need to keep our eyes on the prize. The long-term vision for housing for everyone, for healthcare for everyone, for education for everyone, for real safety. We can't let that go because we are having these new attacks, right? In fact, we need to continue the bold demands in this period, because that's part of what needs to inspire more and more people, right, to be a part of this fight. So those are just a few things. I should give some other people airtime.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's program features We Marched, We Rallied, Now What? On Racial Justice, co-presented by the Women's March Bay Area, featuring Catherine Canton of Emerging Arts Professionals, Alex Yu In of Mama's Boys, Rahula Janowski of Catalyst Project, Vanessa Moses of Causa Justa. The moderator is Angeles Roy. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
Well, I definitely agree with what Vanessa was saying about like what I think of as scaling up for organizations that were already in motion before, like when Barack Obama was president, like those of us who are already kind of already have some structure, already have some stuff in motion, figuring out how can we bring in more people? How can we actually go from having two new volunteers a month to having like 20 or 200? Catalyst Project does a four-month training program for white anti-racist organizers. We have 25 spots usually. The one that's just going to be starting next month, we got over 200 applicants. Usually we get about 100. So there is real hunger out there. People are hungry to learn how to do this work. In response to the massive numbers, we decided to run two programs concurrently so we can take in 50 people instead of 25. I'm a little frightened, but also really excited. One of the things that I wanted to say about this moment is that one thing that's really important for people who are newly activated is to look to the folks who were already in motion before this recent election. There's a lot of folks who are new to being pissed off, new to feeling under attack, you know, new to feeling unsafe in this country, and have a lot of ideas and so forth. But there are people who have felt that way all along, who have deep knowledge, who have a grasp of history, who have strategy, who have structures even to like figure out how to respond to what's happening. So that's a thing that I think that's not really an opportunity, but it's a thing like as people are activated to remember that while this may feel new to you, like this is the history of this country. The other thing is just, it's an opportunity for truth telling right now, because people are like, what is going on? And one of the truths that I like to take this opportunity to tell is, you know, a lot of folks are familiar with the narrative that it's the white working class who elected Trump, right? Has anyone heard that? Has anyone heard that that's not true? Good. Yeah. After the election, it came out that actually the majority of Trump voters were class privileged white men. And actually, most working class white people didn't vote at all. And so why is that narrative so compelling? Like, it feeds into our idea that, like, the poorest white people are the most racist white people. You know, and I don't believe that that's true. I actually think the most racist people are the ones who benefit from keeping a white supremacist system in place. And so these terrible things happening offer opportunities to look at what's really going on, and when people are interested, actually talk about what's really happening.
Inspiration. So I was going to touch on that this is not necessarily anything new for my friends, family, close people, my peers. We continue to be exhausted. This is just more exhaustion. More work, potentially, if we decide to take it on, or do we just take care of ourselves for a little bit? So the thing that comes up for me is realizing that this is a marathon, not a sprint, that we have been. My folks, we have been feeling a lot of pressure, and we have histories, ancestral histories of all kinds of systemic oppression. So that's the piece for me. Like, this isn't new. And oh no, now I need to take care of, like, I'm going to be really honest, like, progressive or liberal white woman tears, or I have to take care of, like, my other white people who are like crying and like asking me what to do for them. And I'm not going to deal with your So thank you. So I'm finding all these resources for white folks to do the work. So I'm excited about that, because before it felt like it really was just, like queer, trans, women of color doing all of this racial justice and justice work. So there's a moment of like, oh, the work is becoming more visible. That this is also a moment for my folks to find respite in Indigenous practices and Indigenous knowledge that has been pushing us to be resilient and has been supporting not only our survival but our thriving in little moments in our own ways. those are the two pieces that I wanted to add in terms of the inspiration.
Oh, this is a big question. Okay, so I'm just going to be real. There's a lot of things you can do tonight and when you walk out the door for tomorrow morning. We are in front of the ICE building every single day at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. Rearrange your noontime break. Walk down there on your 20-minute coffee break or pot break or whatever it is. You can go down there. Those, all of us are there 4 o'clock every day. We need bodies. We need people. We need sign makers. You don't, if you don't have the type of personality to be out there using your voice, we need signs. We need people behind the scenes on your social media saying it's happening. 630 Sansom Street in San Francisco, right? And one of the things that you can do when you're down there, if you're not, like I was saying, if you're not the type of person that really feels that you can be on the front line, people need water. They need something to eat. We need, you know, our different 501c3s need money to keep it going. Sometimes people throw money at it and say, okay, I've done that. But, you know, you can throw money at it and you can give it to us in person and we'll give you a sign. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to be cute here, but it's really important if you can say to yourself, every Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock, I'm going to be down there for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and I'm going to make a difference. And take one or two people with you. Every Thursday. Maybe Thursday's your better day. Maybe Saturday. Well, we're not down there on Saturdays, are we? Maybe Friday's your better day. But, you know, those are things that we can do right away. Right away. The other thing that I want to remind you is don't sit on the fact that the voting is not really happening around us too much, that you can change those Congress seats. Because we are on social media, we can do anything, right? Worldwide, right? I'm preaching to the choir. We can also pick up the telephone and join one of the banks that's for the other states. We don't have to live in that state to get people to get out and vote. So I'm just giving you some grassroots, you know, information that can be done right away. Come to my concert. You know, all that money that we raise outside of our expenses goes to another organization. We've raised $43,000 so far, and it's gone to 7 different organizations here in the city, mostly queer focused, just to keep the services doors open.
When's your next concert?
The next one is at St. Mary's College on April 7th. And that's a free one, so y'all can come.
Thank you, Alex. And I want to bridge from some of the observations that you were making in terms of actionable steps, right? Simple actions that maybe the average person or those who are not activists or organizers can take in order to make a difference in the lives of, you know, their community members. I would like to open that discussion for the group. What are some of the things, the simple things that the non-organizer could do?
Become an organizer? Sorry. that's where you need to go, ultimately. Like, we all need to be mobilized and in motion. But you don't just get out of bed and suddenly decide one day, I'm going to be an organizer. Or you do, and then you cause a lot of problems. So some of what I tell particularly white folks, but these are probably useful things more broadly, is in your day-to-day, begin looking for ways to shift your mindset. And some of the things I think are really easy and useful for that is read works by people of color, whether it's an article in a magazine, whether it's a novel, whatever. If you use Twitter, make sure you're following Black Twitter. Read things about current events written from the point of view of the people who are most impacted by those events. And those things by themselves are not what change the world, but they might change your mindset to the point where you are more ready to step into action and where you're more ready to participate in meaningful and useful ways. I also think that you know, for folks who are white, like, look into Surge, showing up for racial justice. There's a huge chapter in the East Bay. There's a small chapter in San Francisco. It's a place where, you can come in, like, totally, I have never done any activism or organizing ever, and there's a lot of support there. And also to think about, like, what do you actually care about? What are you passionate about? Where can you join up with other people who are passionate about those things to do work on them? I think that these are exceptional times. These are times that, you know, I'm in my late 40s. I never thought that I would live to see times like this. And we're a year into this administration, and there's ways that things normalize. Like, I still go to my job every day. My kid goes to school. You know, things feel in some ways normal. And meanwhile, like, what's actually happening is mind-boggling, and the damage that's being done, it's hard to even think about how it's going to be repaired. And so that calls on us to actually be everyday people who are active and who are organizing, and to no longer kind of have that division of, like, well, I'm not one of those people who do those things. We all have to start doing those things.
Yeah. I part of, like I've been mentioning, my work is to educate myself, to steep myself in racial justice frameworks. And a resource I am going to share that we actually hired from our organization, we hired a racial equity consultant, and her name is Dia Penning, and she works in the arts and not in the arts, in education and curriculum development. So if you have any contact with curriculum, she's a really great resource, Dia Penning. She also works for an organization called World Trust, and they created a documentary called Cracking the Codes. It's a great resource, and it's a great, like, baseline for hearing stories around the history of racism in this country and the real personal impact it has on specifically Black folks. And it's a really good reflection tool to start doing the work, right? The other actionable thing, so watch the movie, talk to people about it, do a screening, start to identify where you are in your journey around racial justice understanding and your analysis on racism and intersectional analysis as well. We all brought up, like, classism, ableism, all these pieces are really important to start to have an analysis on if you're not there already. And if you are, you know, identify goals. And those are my action steps.
The other thing is that you can support all of the different centers that have different programming that they support as well. So the center, LGBTQ, AI, 2S, QQ. I know it's out of order, but I was just seeing if you were still with me. They have incredible programming that is at the center, and they're always looking for volunteers. And that's the other way that you could stand up, is volunteer. Go into different groups that you wouldn't normally be associated with. Go to BLM and say, what can I do to help? Just because we're Black folks, that doesn't mean you have to be outside. Go to Surge if you're of color. Just because they're white folk, that doesn't mean you don't have to be part of it. It's not a segregated movement, right? But what those organizations do is really hold up the part of the population that has not been active, that need a place of like people to get their mind stimulated. But don't just stay in that one place. So,
So first and foremost, I want to encourage everyone to support the protagonism of the impacted communities. And what I mean by that is the immigrant rights movement needs to be led by immigrants, right? There's roles for all of us to play, right, in solidarity with impacted communities. But supporting the organizations that are building the leadership and building the power of impacted communities is a central contribution. And that looks like giving your time or giving money, right? Resources are necessary for all this important work. Causa Justa, Just Cause, we would welcome your support. CJJC.org is a place to learn more about us, and you can volunteer, you can donate, etc. Another thing is to join an organization, whether it's Surge, as folks have talked about, or the place of worship. Be involved with other people. The only way that we can make movement is when we are participating in these things collectively, right, and supporting each other and building community through that. And I want to offer, if you're not sure where to join or what to get involved, Bay Resistance is a local network of about 50 different organizations that has a text alert system that you can sign up for, so you can help mobilize in defense of communities that are under attack from the administration. So if you are not already signed up, you can take your phone out right now and text the word resist to 41411. Again, resist to 41411. And you can join the over 16,000 people who are on that list, who are ready to turn out and turn up when we need that to happen. To be involved in the elections that are coming up. So clearly there's a bunch of important stuff in terms of at the national level. Locally, there's a lot of important stuff coming, right? In June and November, we can literally expect dozens of ballot measures and several really important races that are going to determine the shape and the future, right, of San Francisco, which means shaping the region, which means shaping the state. And we know the power, right, and influence that California has nationally. So what you do here in San Francisco really does matter. So I want to encourage you, whether that's volunteering your time, calling other voters. And San Francisco Rising is an organization here in SF, an alliance of different base building organizations organizing in communities of color here in San Francisco. And SF Rising will be putting out an analysis of the different ballot measures that are going to be coming. So I want to offer that as a resource. We want to get all of you and everyone and your brothers and sisters and siblings of all genders to come throw down.
And on that note, I would like to thank each and one of you again for being here tonight. Rahula, Catherine, Alex, Vanessa, thank you so much for all of that candor and thoughtfulness.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's program was We Marched, We Rallied, Now What? On Racial Justice, co-presented by the Women's March Bay Area, featuring Catherine Canton of Emerging Arts Professionals, Alex Yu In of Mama's Boys, Rahula Janowski of Catalyst Project, Vanessa Moses of Causa Justa. The moderator was Angelis Roy. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Brandon Battaglia, Dan Folds, Alex Espolet, and Lincoln Andrews. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.